Form an offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in downtown Seattle. Cardinals will lose their 19-9. No offensive touchdown scored by the Arizona Cardinals against a Seattle defense that's ranked last in almost every defensive category. Cliff Kingsbury, have you ever been through this as an offensive play caller?
I have not. No, not yet. Since I've been a coach, just not being able to find rhythm as an offense, new to me. So we're going to continue to work at it.
Kyler Murray, what'd you see?
Teams are going to continue to do that, continue to play soft, make us, you know, methodically move the ball down there. As you can see, I feel, you know, like I said, we moved the ball today. We just got down there and didn't finish.
Cardinals went 1-for-5 on fourth down, despite agreeing with his general manager's decision to keep Matt Amendola as kicker. Cliff Kingsbury said it affected his fourth down decisions.
With our kicking situation, you know, that played into it some. We're normally aggressive on fourth down, but if Prater was here, you know, probably at least a couple of those would have kicked at that point.
Cardinals host the Saints on Thursday night football coming up in only 4 days. It's been 51 straight weeks since the Cardinals have won at home. It's almost here. The 2022-2023 NBA season starts tomorrow night nationally and in Phoenix on Wednesday night against Dallas. Suns fans found out good news over the weekend on why Dario Saric has been gone with a personal issue.
Yeah, it's my first shot. First time, you know, being there and first through watching through the whole process. It's just like, you know, thankful, you know, blessed.
Dario and his wife had a son they'll name Nico, born right here in Phoenix. Suns had a week after their last preseason game in Denver on Wednesday before they take on Dallas this Wednesday. CP3, what's the key for this week?
I think we can use this next week to get into even better shape, you know, conditioning, like Coach say, build habits, and I'll be as ready as possible as the first game.
There are 7 teams in the NHL that haven't picked up a point yet. The Coyotes are one of them. They scored 2 goals in the third period to tie the game 3-3 in Boston and then allow the Bruins to score 3 straight to end the game. That gave Boston the win on Saturday. Coyotes had yesterday off. They take on local product Austin Matthews in Toronto. Face-off at 4 o'clock today. Local college football, U of A lost a tough one in Seattle, 49-39 at UW. They have the bye coming up this weekend. NAU a loser, 56-27 at UC Davis. That eliminates them from winning the Big Sky Championship. They're at Idaho State coming up on Saturday. Baseball divisional round yesterday saw the Yankees win 4-2 over Cleveland. That sets up a Game 5 today at 4 o'clock. Winner take all. They go to Houston. Loser of today's game, they're done for the season. NLCS, it's the 5th seed and the 6th seed of the wild cards as no division winners advance. Phillies travel to San Diego to take on the Padres starting tomorrow. Big NFL games yesterday. The Jets actually beat the Packers, and Tampa Bay was upset by the Steelers. Vikings and Giants both won, improving their records to 5-1. Philadelphia remains the only unbeaten team. They're 6-0 after beating Dallas. And Buffalo won the AFC Championship game rematch 24-20 in Arrowhead. And finally, Packers guard John Runyon was fined $5,215 for a leg whip that he pulled in London up against the Giants in the Packers game last weekend. The fine was handed down by the NFL's Vice President of Policy and Rules Administration. What's strange about the letter is it was addressed to John Runyon Jr., and the last 3 words of the letter says, "Sincerely, John Runyon," because the NFL Vice President of Policy and Rules Administration is his dad, John Runyon Sr. We have breaking news into the news desk here at Doug Franz Unplugged. As you are listening to today's version of Unplugged, the breaking news is that Cliff Kingsbury somehow is still the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Why? Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. My name is Doug Franz, and you have found the only podcast in the world totally devoted to the coverage of the 4 major sports franchises of one great American city that drops on your phone each and every weekday morning. We also cover The U of A, ASU, GCA, the Rattlers Rising in the Merc. This is Doug Farns Unplugged. That's kind of like a Monday where you're just kind of feeling things out. Well, hi. Hopefully your weekend went better than whatever happened yesterday in Seattle. Do you realize how bad Seattle's defense is ranking-wise until you face a Cliff Kingsbury offense? And that's supposed to be Cliff's job. That is supposed to be Cliff's job. All right, I got the whole show to get into that. How was your weekend? Hopefully everything went well for you. I did my WTSM-TV internet broadcast of Chaparral High School, and I'm hoping no one from Chaparral notices this, but they win every game I don't do, and they lose every game I'm there. So I know you and I both know I have nothing to do with it, but at some point someone's going to say, you know what? It's that guy's fault. So I'm a little worried about that happening. So that was Friday night. Saturday was all day work. I never really got up, watched all kinds of football and baseball playoffs, which I was thrilled to death with how well that is. And then last night, this kind of stunk. There was a massive issue audio-wise with 12 News. They told me, hey, you know what? Why don't you just stay home and do the broadcast from home? We'll set it up. You do the broadcast from home. So I wasn't on 12 News last night, which really stinks because I love doing that. And of course, I wanted the exposure to try to get as many new members and listed members of the Unplugged Army. So that stunk that didn't work out yesterday because I was all decked out. I'm sitting in the office, where I'm sitting right now, in a tie, waiting. And then they can't throw to me because I can't hear anything they're saying because of whatever the audio problems were. So I was ready to go. So if you were tuning in to see me on 12 News last night, thank you. And sorry I wasn't there, but there was some kind of issue. If there's any way you can do it, try to tune to 1580 today, as I will do my regular 1 hour hit at 1 o'clock with Steve McCollum and Izzy on the main event on 1580 The Fanatic. So I'll be there at 1 o'clock. Before I get rolling, I want to tell you about golf. Coming up this Friday, I don't know how Burrito Express is going to do it, but we're going to be having a little bit of a golf outing coming up. It is an unsanctioned event. Feel free to stop by. We're going to be in Chandler for golf. And I basically had just reached out and said, hey, to Burrito Express and to Bell's Nashville Kitchen, and told Mikey and Angel and Mark, hey, I'd love to get us together and golf on Friday. And of course, Angel does nothing small, nothing. So he says, okay, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this, and a listener will have a chance to play with us. So I don't know what he has in store, so stay tuned for the rest of this week, but we're going to be at San Marcos Golf Course on North Dakota Street in Chandler coming up on Friday morning. And if you'd like to try to get yourself a tee time for that morning, I'll be out there, go for it. And meet Angel, Mark, who own Burrito Express, and meet Mikey, who owns Bell's Nashville Kitchen. But also keep listening this week, and I'll tell you more about how you could win a spot in the group of that we're playing. So I'd love to see you out there if that works out.
Doug's Big One.
My number one opinion for Doug's Big One today: if Cliff Kingsbury loses Thursday night against the Saints, he should not be the head coach Friday morning. It's that simple. This has become that pathetic. He is not the right answer. If he wins on Thursday night, I'll give him a 5-week reprieve to the next bye week. And then it'll be a 5-game judgment of whether or not he's the guy that should solve this. The reason why I'm not firing him this morning is I don't want to fire a guy going into a Thursday night game. That just creates total and utter chaos. You do have to recognize the fact that the Cardinals, as pathetic as they are, they're only one game out of first place. The entire division, except for them, is at 3-3. The Cardinals are at 2-4. So in a division this pathetic, I will allow him an opportunity to fix things if he wins Thursday night. If he loses Thursday night, I have the advantage of the mini bye week. so I can make a change. Vance Joseph becomes the head coach, and there's a whole weekend for everybody to get over it and then to come in and get ready for the Vikings game the following weekend. I like that plan. The reason why I'm firing him, today marks 51 weeks since the Cardinals have won a home game. 51 weeks. If they lose to the Saints coming up on Thursday, they will have made it a full calendar year without a home victory. If they lose to the Saints, they are 3-9 in their last 12 games. So no more talk about, well, they start strong and don't finish well, or they start poorly and they finish, whatever. You're 3-9 in your last 12 games as supposedly a playoff team. This team made the playoffs last year. And yet if you are 3-9 in your last 12, you're clearly headed in totally the wrong direction. I would be firing him because as of right now, they average 5.2 points per first half. That is tied for dead last in the NFL with the juggernaut offense of the Indianapolis Colts. When I said they were 3-9 in their last 12, I would also fire him because of two of those wins, who they represent. Right now, if you actually go tiebreaker by tiebreaker and rank the teams 1 through 16 in each conference, with obviously like Philadelphia in the NFC being the one seed, and you go all the way down based on tiebreakers, would you like to know who's in 16th place in both conferences? In the NFC, it would be the Carolina Panthers. In the AFC, it would be the Las Vegas Raiders. So out of the three wins over the course of the last 12 games, including the upcoming loss to the Saints, because that's what would be based, my firing would be based on, two of your three wins are against two of the worst teams the NFL has to offer. I don't know who's worse, Carolina or Vegas, but those are the two worst teams in the NFL, both ranked 16th in their conference. And yet that's the only teams you can beat if you're coached by Cliff Kingsbury. That does it. That's it. That's clearly enough. And when you look at the throws, I thought Kyler had a poor game yesterday. But you look at the throws Kyler's missing, and at what point is it Kyler, and at what point is it the lack of growth from Kyler? Listen, I blame Kyler for not coming to minicamp. I blame Kyler for missing OTAs. I blame Kyler for not spending enough time in the film room. I blame Kyler for not developing as a top-notch quarterback, even though he's got incredible talent. But at the same time, a head coach has to be able to handle that. A head coach has to be able to push an athlete who's obviously not doing enough to push himself. And so I'm looking at Cliff saying, that's it. If you want to fire Kime with him, go right ahead. I don't care. I'm not here to defend Steve Kime at all. It kind of would be interesting to see A-Dub lead a search for a new head coach. Vance Joseph gets put in place for the rest of the year. If they win out, fine, Vance, you can have the job. But the chances that I'm giving it to Vance are pretty much between slim and none. If Cliff actually wins Thursday Night Football, I'm not saying he's safe. I'm saying we would then take a look at the next few games. Their next five games would be, and again, after Thursday night, would be at Minnesota, home against those same Seahawks you just lost to, at the Rams, home against the 49ers, home against the Chargers. Those five games, they could easily go 1-4, and then I'm at the bye week, and I'm still then firing Cliff Kingsbury. 4-1, he's safe. 3-2, it depends on the product. 2-3, he's probably gone. 1-4, 0-5, he's out. And part of the reason is this is unwatchable. If I'm Michael Bidwell, how can I go to the fan base and honestly say, spend your money to watch this? We're going to be down on average 20-5 at halftime. It's a horrible product. And we either have injured or suspended receivers, and even though Michael refuses to take the blame for this, we have an owner who didn't want to spend the money when there were gaping holes in the pass rush and the secondary. Listen, this team is unwatchable. Let me ask you this. As a Cardinals fan, do you get excited on game day? Do you get excited for your tailgate? Do you get excited to watch Cardinals football? If you were a season ticket holder right now, if you are a season ticket holder right now, are you happy? I mean, if somebody gave you face value for every one of your tickets the rest of the way, would you take it in a heartbeat right now? Like, you keep your season tickets for next year, but you don't have to spend any more money on it. Wouldn't you be happy? I think you would. I mean, I'm guessing. I think you would take that in a heartbeat. Meaning you don't want to go. Where's your passion for Cardinals football right now? I think Cliff Kingsbury has robbed you of that passion. And if I'm right, then why in the world is the owner keeping him around? I refuse to believe those contract extensions for Cliff and Keim are worth the paper they're written on. There's no way Michael Bidwill was that stupid. You can't get me to believe it. I mean, as mad as all of us are as Cardinals fans, and as bad of a job as he did as owner this offseason, and he did a bad job, the man is not an idiot. He is he's a frighteningly intelligent person. So why else would you have signed those people to those two people to extensions, unless it was a PR move to try to tell the rest of the world they're safe, they're not lame ducks? And then you can just get right back out of it if you need to. Had to be some clause that if you win 11 games in 2022, it locks in the remaining 4 years or something. There had to be something that allows him to get out this year. Because this product is not worth the price you're paying. And if he doesn't realize it, you should let him know you realize it. And if they go 1-4 in the remaining five games, now you fire them and at the bye week. And you start off December without them. And you start your search for a new head coach in December. And you clearly make a play at Sean Payton. If you care enough about winning. And I don't know if Michael Bidwill cares that much about winning to go after a Sean Payton. It's easy for us to sit here and say that. But that's the number one available head coach. And if you want to save Kyler, if you want to prove to yourself to find out whether or not Kyler's the guy, then you go get Sean Payton. And Michael Bidwill, if you don't get Sean Payton, then that tells us how much you really want to win. Because that's the number one guy. So if you want to be the number one franchise, go get the number one available head coach. Show us. You didn't spend the money at cornerback. You didn't spend the money on a pass rusher. You've saved the money this year, and it burnt you. Fix it. All right, sound credits today. I'm mostly just Cardinals and Suns. I found some crazy sound from the Syracuse head basketball coach, Jim Boeheim, that I'll play for you near the end of the show. But today is almost all Cardinals, a little bit of Suns, and that's it. That's the major focus today after what we saw yesterday. So azcardinals.com is where I got the Cliff and Kyler from. And the Suns PR department, nice enough to send me the Suns sound. And I wasn't smart enough to figure out how to download the Coyote sound that the Coyote sent me. It was said my browser would not allow me to. So I thought, all right, I don't have time to figure that out. And then ESPN.com gave me the Jim Boeheim. All right, coming up next. Cliff Kingsbury says he's never been through anything like this. Well, he's about to be through something he's already been through, getting fired. That's next on Doug Frauds Unplugged. I have grown a lot more sympathetic about saying another human being should be fired. It used to be, to me, very easy. Hey, you're making millions upon millions of dollars as a professional athlete or as a professional coach. You're failing to a miserable standard, so therefore, you know, you're gone. And once you go through getting fired, I don't know. It has changed me. So I hope this doesn't sound personal to Cliff Kingsbury. Hey, you did the best you could. But if Cliff Kingsbury does not win on Thursday Night Football, I see no reason to continue. And the timing is perfect to move on from him. Just absolutely perfect. And looking at the numbers and looking at the way this team is playing, it's amazing to me on how perfect of a time it is to fire him. The fourth downs yesterday, they were 1-5 on fourth down. Now, to me, I realize a lot of you might have a problem. Did he go for it here? Did he not go for it there? Things like that. Let me give you an example on the lack of growth of Kyler Murray as one area where it really bothers me. It was, if you remember the fourth down, about 5 minutes into the second half, they did not convert. And I don't care about that fourth down, okay? What got to me is on 3rd and 3, they handed it off to Eno Benjamin. He ran up the middle, got 1 yard. So 3rd and 3 turned into 4th and 2. When you choose to run the football on 3rd and 3 against a rush defense that's historically bad, I totally accept that play call coming into the headset of Kyler Murray. I totally accept Cliff Kingsbury deciding, let's run it against this bad rush defense. Good decision. Here's what bothered me, though. If you watch that play back, it happened that right at about the 10-minute mark, third quarter, A.J. Green is in single coverage to Kyler Murray's right. So on your screen, it's at the top of the screen. There is zero safety help over the top. And there's a linebacker that's over there, but he's very far away. So just think 3rd and 3. If Kyler Murray either A, calls a quick audible and rifles a slant pattern out, slant pass out there, that's a first down. And before you say, wait a minute, I don't want you checking into any plays because A.J. Green doesn't get the checks because you're still mad about Green Bay last year at home, then why is A.J. Green here? If you have that little faith in A.J. Green, why is he here? And I'm not saying for you, I'm saying for the Cardinals. You decided to bring him back, and now the clear check you don't do because you don't trust him, then why is he here? And that, to me, is what you want in a quarterback. If Kyler Murray is truly growing, he never even looked over there. He had no idea that he had A.J. Green that easily completable of a pass. Never saw it. And why wouldn't you run some kind of little RPO game right there where you hold it into Eno's belly, and if you see Eno's got it, you give it to him. If you don't think he's got it, Kyler keeps it and runs around right end, or he pulls it out and throws the slant right there. I mean, this is what I don't get. The old RG3 offense that the Washington, at the time, Redskins used with Mike Shanahan in the one rookie year where RG3 was incredible was exactly that. Just read a couple defenders. It was unstoppable. And on a play like that, that is a no-brainer. So not only is Cliff, does Cliff either not have the ingenuity to do that, or B, he hasn't trained Kyler well enough for Kyler to see that. Or maybe Kyler doesn't have the authority to change the play on a third and three. So when I see him not even look at AJ Green on that play and never even consider checking into that pass play, that lets me know either there's not enough growth from Kyler from the standpoint of Cliff, or Kyler has the power to do it and didn't even see it to do it. It's really, I mean, it's beyond frustrating. Cliff says that he hasn't seen anything like this in his career, an offensive lull.
I have not. No, not yet. Since I've been a coach, just not being able to find rhythm as an offense, new to me. So we're going to continue to work at it, personnel wise, see how we can move things around, and scheme wise, see how we can get better. Because you know, it's a 6-game view, and it's hasn't been good enough.
I'm not even going crazy that they're 2-4. It's 5 points a game per first half. This guy is supposed to be an offensive genius. When Michael Bidwill hired Cliff Kingsbury, he didn't say the phrase offensive genius. But what he said is, everybody's fighting to find an offensive coordinator that is special, and then if they do a good job, you end up losing your offensive coordinator to become a head coach. Why not just hire the offensive coordinator as head coach? That was his theory. So with a terrible offense coming off of the Steve Wilkes regime, in which you fired Mike McCoy, then it's, hey, let's get this guy in place. And when he does really well, no one's going to be able to take him from us because he's already our head coach. So you hired him because of his offensive prowess. And this is the product you're getting on the field. 5 points in the first half is his average. They scored their first points of the entire season in the first quarter on a field goal. The problem was that started as first and goal from the 3, second and goal from the 1. And you had to kick a field goal. This offensive genius doesn't have it broken down with a running quarterback to be able to figure out how to get the ball forward 2 to 3 yards. So you went 0-for-3 on your first 3 fourth down attempts, and you had to kick a field goal from first and goal at the 3 and second and goal from the 1. Where's this offensive juggernaut at? If this is his wheelhouse, if he's an offensive guy, and the reason why you stink is because of the offense, then why is he here? Guess what Kyler compared it to?
I mean, rookie year, probably. Yeah, I mean, that's the last time I've felt this hard, you know. It's tough out there right now. Tough. That's what it feels like. We're, you know, and a lot of it, like I said, is self-inflicted. Putting it on ourselves. Gotta be better.
They like to say it's self-inflicted. Well, of course it is. But here's the other thing. This self-inflicted problems are because you're not a good team. I mean, there's no more talk about what you thought they were going to be. 6 games in, it is what it is. The Arizona Cardinals are the 3rd worst team in the NFL. You just got to say it and you got to embrace it. They're better than the Raiders. They're better than the Carolina Panthers. And that's it. The Carolina Panthers, according to Tiebreaker, are the 16th place team in the NFC. The Raiders are the 16th place team in the AFC. Those are your 2 wins this year. You've only been able to beat the 2 worst teams the NFL has to offer. And one of the games, you needed one of the most dramatic fourth quarter comebacks in NFL history to pull it off. That's how bad you are. You needed that level of a comeback to defeat Team 31. And you didn't really get rolling against Carolina until the second half
when you beat Team 32. So, yeah, I hear you, Kyler, that it's self-inflicted. But that just proves you're not good. That's what bad teams do. I mean, the talent in the NFL, everybody's got it. It's just a matter of coaching and execution by the players and the coaching staff. So when you're not executing, you know what? It's because you had a bad day for a game. If you're not executing for two games, you know what? You're not as complete as you think you are. We're on week six. We're going into week seven. And you're still not executing? Yeah, that's no longer, hey, things just didn't go our way. That's because you're just not good. And Michael Bidwell, you've signed up for this. You've agreed to this. This is your product. You chose not to sign any pass rushers. You chose not to sign any cornerbacks in free agency. You chose to re-sign Steve Keim. You chose to re-sign Cliff Kingsbury. This is all on you. 1-5 on fourth down. Cliff Kingsbury, what really went into your dominance of the first quarter and then you guys falling on your face?
You know, I think that fourth down hurt. You know, I felt like we needed to convert that. And for a reason after that, it just felt like we lost some confidence or whatever and didn't play very good from that point on. Got to be able to convert those in that situation. And unfortunately, it didn't work out and we didn't recover well.
That to me, I'm not saying he's wrong, but to me, that shows how fragile his team is. And I think you have fragile teams when you run camp pillow fight. Because one play, one non-fourth down conversion, and he says, we didn't play well from that point forward. That's all it takes. When you're a fragile team, that's all it takes. One bad play. You're playing the worst defense in the NFL, really. And here are your fourth down conversions. 4th and 4, 4th and 2, 4th and 2, 4th and 3. The last one was an interception on 4th and 11. So that's just, you know, it's 4th and 11. You're down two possessions. You got to do what you got to do. The other ones are 4th and 4, 4th and 2, 4th and 2, 4th and 3. All four pass plays. So you're taking on the worst rush. It's almost a historically bad rush defense. Going into yesterday's game, the Seattle defense was in dead last in yards. They were 31st in points, meaning they gave up the second most points in the NFL. They were 32nd in rush defense. And even crazier, they only averaged 1.2 sacks per game. 1.2. There were only two teams in the NFL who averaged fewer sacks than the Seattle Seahawks. Detroit and Arizona. Yeah, us. And yet Kyler Murray was sacked 6 times. And you couldn't, against a historically bad rush defense, you never chose one running play on 4th and 4, 4th and 2, 4th and 2, 4th and 3. Not one time. It's not just that they're 2-4. It's the patheticness, if that's a word, of this product. And it's really the Seahawks game to me. When you combine, the only teams you can beat are the Raiders and Carolina. With an opponent that's this pathetic defensively, and you made them out to be the 85 Bears because of your offense, you have to put it into that context that Cliff Kingsbury has become so bad at his job that they score 9 points in a game against that defense. And oh, by the way, 6 of those 9 points were scored without that defense on the field because your special teams unit created a turnover on a punt. Even worse, I think, in my opinion, this is not really factual, but I think it's even worse that you marched right down the field and kicked a field goal on your opening drive and you never scored again offensively. So against the worst defense the NFL had to offer, you went about 50 minutes, 54 minutes without scoring another point. That defense shut you out for 54 minutes. I understand those of you that say Cliff should be fired today. I'm not really going to tell you you're wrong. I just don't fire a guy going into a short week. I think that's just too much chaos to fire him going into the Saints game. And for those of you that are afraid, well, if they beat the Saints, now he stays. Okay, so what? First of all, I'm not worried about them beating the Saints because they haven't won a home game in a year. Why should I believe they start now? Number two, even if they do win, I'm kind of the feeling this season is lost anyway. So I'm going to be able to evaluate that if he doesn't go 5-0 from this point forward, and I mean after the Saints game, so really I'm saying 6-0 or 5-1, he's gone anyway. We're fine either way. Unless you think Vance Joseph should be the head coach going forward and you want to give him as much time to save the season, it doesn't matter when you name him interim head coach, because to me, he shouldn't be the next head coach. It should be Sean Payton. Cliff, what'd you think of the way Kyler played?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's still finding his rhythm. I thought he ran the ball well on some of that stuff that we had called and a couple times when he had to make plays, but we're definitely not as in sync as we've been in the past as far as accuracy, timing, all those things overall, and you know, we have to get there quick because it's not good enough. Defense, I thought, played really hard. We kept on the field a bunch, and they played hard and gave us a chance to win. That's a really good offense. They, you know, whatever, seventh in the league in scoring, and they held them to under 20 points again. And offensively, we have to find a way.
I think Kyler stunk. I thought he was bad. He had, at times, open receivers that he missed, both either accuracy-wise or lack of vision to correctly diagnose the defense and get the ball where it needed to go. My example of the 3rd and 3, 10-minute mark, third quarter. Then you couple that with 2 fumbles, an interception. Now, granted, his teammate recovered one of them, so he only had 2 turnovers, but he had 2 fumbles and an interception. So whatever reasons why Kyler Murray was almost the reason you won, he was definitely one of the reasons why you lost. Do I blame Kyler for that? Of course I do. But I also look at Cliff and I say, where's the growth? Where's the development? Why are other young quarterbacks developing at a faster rate than Kyler Murray is? I blame Kyler's lack of desire to put the time in to be better. But I also put it on Cliff because you've made the decision that he was the guy from day one and hasn't really learned how to be professional, and you haven't held him accountable in order to do it. On a day where Kyler looked as poorly as he did, boy, Kyler, I hope when the media asks you about your performance, you stare yourself down. Please say, I missed this throw. Please say, I threw a bad pick. Please say, I've got to have better ball security. Those fumbles hurt us. Please don't say, we have to do something. Because this game was about you needing to do a lot more.
Didn't convert in the red zone. And then after that, I mean, felt like we moved the ball well today. I felt, you know, we just get down to the red zone or past the 50. False start here, negative play here, and we just can't finish. Can't finish. That's the moral of the story right now. Just not finishing drives, not putting the ball in the end zone. Can't win like that.
So when he starts to list things, did you notice he immediately went false start here? So it's the penalties on other people that's on his mind. Or negative play there. Well, he's talking about when the line gets beat up and somebody gets hit behind the line of scrimmage. Never talked about himself. Never looked at himself as part of the reason why this team lost in Seattle. That's our leader? That's the guy that's going to galvanize everybody else on the team? DJ Humphries didn't want to talk to the media after the game. I will say this 85 million times. I think every player should talk to the media. Not because they owe it to the media, but because they owe it to the machine. All of us are part of this machine. Fans, media, players, teams. It is over a $10 billion industry, and the reason why is because you love it. You support the advertising that goes with it. You support a podcast. You support the teams and the players. You pay for their salary. You want to know what's going on. They need to tell you. They need to talk to you. But you know what? If you're going to be quiet all the time and never talk to the media, I'm kind of like, well, okay. I think you're making a mistake, but fine. But in situations like DJ Humphries, where you have no problem talking to the media when things are going well, and you don't want to talk to the media when things are going poorly, that is a front runner. I'm just shocked that Michael Bidwell accepts this. I still can't believe he signed those contract extensions. Then this. We talked about this last week. Matt Amendola is 2 for his last 11 on any kick from the 30-yard line and beyond. And when Cliff was asked about the situation with some of the fourth down conversion attempts,
With our kicking situation, you know, that played into it some. We're normally aggressive on fourth down, but if Prater was here, you know, probably at least a couple of those would have kicked at that point.
There's a kind of a feeling going around, or an excuse going around the city or the league, that says, hey, Amendola beat out the other kickers in practice. Therefore, what do you expect? Number one, who are you bringing in? I rarely miss an arena football game. I have seen better kickers than Amendola in the Arena League. So who are these people you're bringing in that Amendola beat out? Number two, he made it through one game with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs said, you're not NFL quality, so why is he here? I mean, don't you look at the Chiefs and say they're better than us? Don't you strive to be like that? And if the Chiefs decided Amendola can't get it done, why is he here? Then he proved it to you that he shouldn't be here last week. I don't care that he made kicks in practice. He choked in clutch situations with the Chiefs. He choked in a clutch situation with you last week. And then you said, no, that's okay, we'll keep him. Now he misses another extra point. So that gets in the head of the head coach and now affects play calling. I don't know whether that's on Cliff or Keim, but I can easily share the blame on both of them. And obviously there's no way Amendola is coming back, because you would not have thrown him under the bus like that. I mean, what a cop-out by the head coach. Hey, I would have done something different if we had our kicker. Really? What, call a better play? I mean, listen, going for it on those fourth downs is not a terrible decision. There's a good reason to kick it, and there's a good reason to go for it. You didn't lose the game because you don't have Matt Prater. You lost the game, Cliff, because you're a failure right now. You are failing. It's not the kicker. I mean, the dance that Cliff and Kyler do after the games on why it's other people's fault, it's going to make you car sick. Ken Summers asked a brilliant question, Ryder, Arizona Republic. Can you really count on D-Hop coming back and being the savior? What are your expectations of him on Thursday?
No doubt. With how we're playing, I hope that he can provide just a spark, like I said, on the practice field, the way he competes, and then just his playmaking, his after the catch stuff. And he's a guy that you get it close to him, he's going to make a play on the ball. But a short week without practicing for however many weeks he's actually not practiced, it's a tall task. But just to have his ability out there will be big for us.
At the end of the 2021 season, I appreciated Cliff Kingsbury's honesty and says, I didn't do a good job of planning the offense without D-Hop, and I've learned a lot. What did you learn, Cliff? How are you better this year without D-Hop than you were last year? When you're 2-4 with your only two wins against the two most pathetic franchises the NFL has to offer, how did you improve? With an offense that scored zero offensive touchdowns and three total points against the worst defense the NFL has, how did you improve without D-Hop? Michael Bidwell, every day Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury are your head coach and general manager. You are wasting our time as fans. Your product is unwatchable right now. And simply put, fans don't like your team. They love the Cardinals. But I mean, this team right here, there's no connection. Make the move. And I'm starting this train now because I have little doubt they're either going to lose to the Saints or they beat the Saints, yay, and then in the remaining five games before the bye week, they're 1-4 or 2-3. I have no doubt in my mind. So either way, firing Cliff is going to be the right move soon. Couple quick things from Monty, and then we'll get to versus Vegas, presented by KingCappers.com. As Suns start on Monday, can't believe that we're already here. Number one, you heard in the four-minute offense, Dario Saric has been gone from the team for personal reasons the last couple days. Well, personal reasons always sound so tragic. It was much better news. He had a baby boy, Nico. Nico was born. He says he was born right here in Phoenix, gonna have an American passport. He was so happy giving birth to an American boy now, because as a citizen born in the country. But Monty was asked something that I kind of had a little bit of a problem with this, because I think this is so easy to diagnose. But he was asked, as good as Booker is and as many things as Booker has accomplished in such a short time frame, what does Booker have to improve on going into this season?
Tough one, man. I get asked that a lot about him. It's a hard one. I mean, if you look at the top 10 players in the league, like what would you say that any of them need to work on? You know, what part of their game? Sure, there's something that's there. I think when you get in that realm of player or players, it's probably an appreciation for how they make everybody else better. Usually those guys are seeing a double team every night, so they free up other guys to get open shots. When they have the ball, they draw a double team, so they're kicking it to guys, and that assist doesn't typically count. You know, it's usually a hockey assist. I think that's how you have to start measuring those guys, because they draw so much attention. If you look at all those guys in the top 25 players, they typically are in a place where how they make other players, and I hate that word, how they make them better, because players are good. I think it's how they open up the game for those guys, at least on the offensive end. And I think that's where a lot of Book's value is. Like, it drives him nuts. But I'll draw up a play and I'll be like, Book, I want you to be a decoy here. He's like, it's an expensive decoy, coach. You know, he'll say something typical Book. But because he can do that, it opens up the floor for other guys. I think that's how you have to measure it. I don't think many of those guys go into the summer and they're like, okay, I got to they're usually pretty complete. And I think that's where he is.
Okay, number one, let's acknowledge the humor there. That is funny. I'm an expensive decoy. I got to give Book that. But it shows once again the failure at the end of last season. If the question of what does Book have to improve on is that hard of a question, what did you say in the exit interview? Oh, that's right. We didn't do one. At least not with DA. I mean, everybody's got to do an exit interview. When you say something to improve on, do you know Booker's a 35% three-point shooter in his career? Last year, he shot a career-high 38. No one wants to talk about this. I'll tell you what he needs to improve on. His three-point shooting. 38% is good. But if he's lethal cover of video game, top 10 player in the league, as you're suggesting, Monty, well, it's not like because he's a dunk machine or he's going to lead the league in block shots. He should be an above 41% three-point shooter, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And he's at 38, and that's a career high, 35 overall for his career. And you're saying, I don't really know what he needs to improve on? I think it's as basic as that. How is he not a top two or three three-point shooter every year? I think he misses too many threes for an elite player. I don't look at him and say, oh, you're bad because you missed a three. But I'm saying we continually talk about him in this all-star upper echelon player, which I do think he belongs. But I think one of the criteria is you have to dominate a certain area of the game. And for him, it's got to be three-point shooting. And as of now, he does not dominate three-point shooting. And the other thing I think he can increase, I realize you said hockey assists. I think his assist numbers could be a lot higher. That he should recognize defenses a little better and be able to get rid of the ball to avoid the double team sooner and create for somebody else. I think those would be two areas. And then, of course, he can always get better defensively, but that's a little different. I like this one from Monty. He was being asked about his relationship with his assistant coaching staff, and specifically assistant head coach Kevin Young, and learning with him and their time in Philadelphia. And so I cut out a piece. The whole answer I didn't think mattered much, but this little piece I thought was really interesting, giving credit to a Philadelphia staff where, you know, a lot of people thought Brant Brown was part of the problem.
I learned more about rotations and combinations there than any place I've ever been. Kev was a big part of that. And so I think whether it's on the bus, on the bench, upstairs, yesterday I called him and he was at, I think it was Van's game, his son or Jude. I can't remember which one. And I could hear everybody in the background. I hung up on him because I knew he was with his family, but it was going to be one of those conversations. And he was like, no, man, I'm good. I'm good. I'm like, bye. Go see your family. I don't want Melissa mad at me. I hung up. And because he knows, like, if I call him, it's probably going to be at least a 15-20 minute conversation. We just have a lot of trust. I know that when he brings me something, it's for the team and it's for the betterment of the team.
Just wanted to give you quick Suns. We'll do a lot more Suns throughout the rest of this week. Wednesday night, home against Dallas, ready for the season. And I think we need somebody in this team to start winning, huh? Coyotes, one of seven teams without any points yet of the NFL season. Cardinals falling on their face following a playoff season last year. And Herm Edwards already fired an ASU, an embarrassment at the beginning of the season, looking better with the win over UW. A U of A not bad against UW, but still coming off the season that they had last year. We need somebody to do something. Diamondbacks, what, 15 games below 500, whatever it was? Somebody's got to do something. And we're just getting sick of it. So go Suns, let's go. Wednesday night. Coming up next, something quick that I couldn't believe a college basketball head coach said. And then versus Vegas. presented by KingCappers.com on Doug Franz Unplugged. Quick basketball before we bring in Jerry from KingCappers.com with your free play. I tell you, I couldn't believe when I heard this. Like, I read all kinds of things, go through all kinds of pieces of information to try to see, is any of this entertaining to you or something that you're going to want to know? And this just seemed too out there to not play for you. So if you didn't pay attention last year to the NCAA tournament, the Big Ten was considered to be the number one college basketball conference all year long. I mean, every night it seemed like there was another top 20 matchup that was in the Big Ten. All the time. There was some great basketball in the Big Ten last year. So then they go into the NCAA tournament. And I think they had 9 teams, and 7 of them, this is off the top of my head, 7 of them lost in the first round. And I think 2 of them either didn't make it to the Sweet 16 or only one of them did. I can't remember. But the Big Ten totally embarrassed themselves in the NCAA tournament. So Jim Boeheim is asked about the ACC, its strength, trying to match up with the Big Ten. And remember, the ACC had Duke and North Carolina go super deep into the tournament. And listen to what Jim Boeheim says about the comparison of the Big Ten and the ACC, totally based on the NCAA tournament.
That's what you play for. Simple. At the end of the day, you play for the tournament. That's what you play for. Simple. Yeah. You can say all you want about the Big Ten. They sucked in the tournament. So to me, that's what they did. I don't care what they did in the regular season. They beat them out. They beat themselves. All their wins were in their league. But you can't play in the tournament, then you're not good. Some people write the tournament off like, well, it's just one game or two. No, it isn't. That's what you play for. That's what you play for, to get in the tournament and to win in the tournament. And if you don't do that, then you're not good.
My word. When is the last time you heard a college basketball head coach say somebody's entire conference sucked and it's not their own? Wow. I mean, I don't know if it's really going to come back to haunt him. I mean, how does ripping one whole conference really come back to haunt you? But that was, Boeheim. I'm not a big Boeheim guy. I think he's a little overrated as a head coach. He gets Jerry McNamara goes off one postseason, Carmelo Anthony goes off, you win one title, and suddenly you're great. Now, I don't think he's a doofus either, by any stretch of the imagination. I totally get his place in college basketball history. But, I don't know. I just mix in a few more Final Fours if you're like he says, it's about the tournament. You're right, it's about the tournament. So where have you been? Where have you been when it comes to winning NCAA tournaments? Oh, by the way, it's time for
Versus Bayard.
I was bad. Oh. After my fantastic week last week of 3-0, 2-0, 2-0, throughout the week, I fell right back on my face yesterday, or over the weekend, going 4-6. Not good. Not good. This is Versus Vegas. It is presented by KingCappers.com. KingCappers.com is not a sports book. They do not take your money where you gamble and then give it back to you. They study with computers, advanced analytics, and then use those spreadsheets to come up with games that they believe in, and you can pay for their knowledge, and they will lead you to the opportunity to cash. Just go to KingCappers.com, choose a sport or choose a package that's right for you, and I think you're going to be impressed. Well, My you are not going to be impressed with what I put forth this weekend. Not at all. I mean, the ones I felt confident in, I got right. But the Steelers upset smacked me in the face. That was bad. Dodgers smacked me in the face. My Bobcats kept turning the ball over near the red zone and not scoring and converting to give me the over that I thought of. I just blew the Mississippi State-Kentucky game. I'm not really happy about that. And then I had Chiefs plus 2.5, and they lost by 4. Those are some of my losses. All right, it's your turn, Jerry. They are the star of the show. I'm just the minnow throwing out things that I think. Here are the Sharks. This is Jerry with KingCappers.com. What do you have for us today, Jerry?
We split our double barrel selections as James Madison dropped their first game of the season and Syracuse win comfortably and cover the 3.5-point spread. Monday selection takes us to the NHL, where the Colorado Avalanche visit the Minnesota Wild. Our spreadsheet play of the day recommends a play on the Colorado Avalanche money line. Best of luck, and let's cash.
Oh, yeah. I like that one. I told you earlier the Coyotes are one of 7 teams that don't have a point yet on the season. The Wild are one of the 7 as well. And I like how, hey, it's still early, so let's be a little safe, go money line. Not that it matters. Trust them, not me. But that pick has my full endorsement. That's solid. I didn't think of that one. So I don't have that on my sheet. Well done, Jerry. Well done, King Cappers. Go to kingcappers.com and find the play for you. And don't forget, use the promo code ARMY and you get a nice discount on whatever it is that you choose to do. I got 2 plays. Game 5 is tonight in the ALDS. And I don't think Cleveland's going to win in Yankee Stadium. And I'm going to be a little gutsy, stick my neck out, and take the run line because it's about a pretty big difference in juice. It's around plus 135 compared to minus 150, I think it is. That's off the top of my head. So I like Yankees on the run line minus 1.5. And I think the Broncos are trash. Just absolute trash. So I realize Vegas knows that. And maybe it's a little steep on the spread. But the Chargers should easily be able to cover 4.5 at home. Easy. So I got the Chargers minus 4.5. And I got the Yankees on the run line minus 1.5. And then you heard KingCappers.com. Their free play is money line with the Lanch. That does it for today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged. Boy, we've got a lot to get to this week. Having Coyotes and Suns and Cardinals all during the week for the first time this year. Well, I guess since last year. No, because, yeah, in January, they would have all been playing. So there's that. But also, ASU is back in action coming up this weekend, even though U of A's got their bye. So we've got a lot to get to. I'll try to get in touch with a couple guests as well and have them join us. And you know who I'm thinking of. If you're a Suns fan, you know who needs to make his triumphant return to Doug Franz Unplugged. Thanks a lot to 1580, the Fanatic. They've got me on today at 1 o'clock. Can't wait to see Steve McCollum and Izzy today. Please find a way to listen to that at 1 o'clock. It's 1580 on your AM dial, 1580 the Fanatic. And I still say thanks a lot to 12 News for trying to get me on last night, even though there were a lot of audio issues. Have a great Monday. And no matter what you do today, remember one thing. You're going to do your job better than Cliff Kingsbury does his. I'll see you tomorrow.